Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Glad you could make time for this edition of Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the EU election observer mission in Mozambique cautiously lauds the conduct of the poll.
The European observers have visited 53 polling stations. And of those 53 polling stations, the mass opened in time, had their equipment in place, and had their polling staff in place.
Ghana has so far escaped the Ebola virus, but since the UN mission on Ebola was set up in Accra, some Ghanaians are wondering whether their government is doing enough to protect them.
They should have been able to put in place at least some form of testing. Question is, you cannot tell if somebody is telling the truth or not.
And more Kenyans are choosing to be cremated rather than being buried. Stay with Africa Link to find out the reason behind this change.
Top story.
Mozambique decide. Mozambique decides. Millions of voters from the African Portuguese-speaking nation cast their ballots on Wednesday in the presidential election. The head of the EU election observer mission, Judith Sargentini, told DW that the vote was largely peaceful.
The European observers have visited 53 polling stations. And of those 53 polling stations, the mass opened in time, had their equipment in place, and had their polling staff in place. There was one polling station that we observed that did not open at all, one that was delayed because of a lack of equipment, and European observers were not allowed into a polling station in Tet because the president said that we were lacking a stamp on this identification paper. Well, I don't have a stamp either because there's no need for a stamp.
The poll pits Filipe Nyusi of the ruling Frelimo against Afonso Dhlakama, an opposition candidate running under the former rebel movement Renamo. Another party, the Democratic Movement of Mozambique, has been gaining support recently, especially among young voters. DW correspondent Antonio Cascais is in Maputo, and I asked him whether voters agreed with what the head of the EU Election Observer Mission said.
Well, some of the voters I met, even here in the capital, in Maputo, in the south of Mozambique, said that in some cases things didn't work very well. I met many people who said they couldn't vote, although they wanted to vote. One woman, Ana Conceição, said she couldn't vote because her name was not on the lists, although she had registered herself. And this is not a unique case. There are many cases like that here in the capital, in Maputo. And we have also many reports of our correspondents in the north and northwest of the country that say that there were some problems, even some light cases of violence. But in general, I can say that most of the polling stations I visited today in the morning opened in time, had their equipment in place, and their people in place.
What about the presidential candidates? How confident were they as they went to cast their ballots?
Well, the presidential candidate of the ruling Frelimo party, Filipe Nyusi, was one of the first who voted this morning. And he voted in Maputo in a secondary school. And he said he believes that he will win because he himself and his party has worked a lot to win this poll.
Someone asked me whether I believed I could win. Of course I will. You surely have seen our work. We've worked as a team, prepared well, and that's been evident over the many years. The results will show victory for the candidate speaking to you and victory for the Mozambican people.
And the candidate of the Renamo party, the opposition, the biggest opposition party, He is very, very popular in this campaign, and he went also to the same school in which Philippe Nyusi voted. And in an interview with DW Africa, he said that he hopes that this time there will not be any fraud, everything will be all right with the counting of the votes.
As you are aware, election results in Africa have not been free and fair. I hope that for the first time in Mozambique, these results will be acceptable, fair, and credible. That's my hope.
Can you tell us about the voter turnout? How big was it?
I saw very, very long queues in the polling stations, even before the polling stations opened at 7 o'clock in the morning. And in the afternoon, the queues got fewer, but there is a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of interest of the people in the streets of Maputo.
DW correspondent Antonio Cascais in Maputo. And we've just gathered that the opposition RENAMO is reportedly claiming election fraud in Tet province, a stronghold for the ruling Frelimo. Many observers say this election will be too close to call. Though Frelimo has been in power since independence in 1975, some analysts say it could lose votes over allegations of corruption and enrichment by the family of outgoing President Armando Guebuza. So what chance does the opposition have of dethroning Frelimo? A question I put to Alex Fiennes, head of the Africa program at Chatham House in the UK.
The chances, I would suggest, are very low indeed. I think Philippe Nyusi, the Frelimo presidential candidate, is likely to win. The question I think that we all are asking is, how many seats will the opposition win out of the 250 parliamentary seats that are available in this election? That's going to be the big test. How big a majority will Frelimo have this time round? The size of the Frelimo majority in Parliament is important because that will dictate how Frelimo performs in the future, the decisions it will make. And it is correct that there's a growing sense of fatigue. Frelimo has been in power for 39 years. That's a very, very long time. So voters are looking at alternatives. I think the third party, MDM, has shown that it can take votes from Frelimo. The Mozambican Democratic Movement did very well in the municipal elections last year. Its candidates took more than 40% of the vote in 13 municipalities, and I think it can do well again. The question will be how well will RENAMO do, whether it will remain the second largest opposition party in Mozambique or will become third. Some observers, including myself, we've been surprised at the size of the rallies for Mr. de Klerk. I think that's partly about youth support for him. He has suddenly attracted youth in the center and north of the country. It's also just about curiosity. Mr. de Klerk has been in the news a lot over the last 18 months after he decided to return to limited conflict. There is a lot of curiosity to see this historic figure, hence large rallies for him.
You've just mentioned that Frelimo has been in power since independence in Mozambique.
Yeah, since 1975, Frelimo has been in power.
Then how come the opposition didn't unite under one candidate if they really intend to oust Frelimo from power?
The opposition isn't united, and in fact the party that both Frelimo and RENAMO are worried about is MDM. They see MDM longer term as a threat to both of them. And MDM, I think, is reflective, particularly in urban Mozambique, of growing frustration, including by Frelimo supporters, the middle class and youth, and hence anxiety about how MDM performs. So the results for MDM will be very interesting, whether MDM is able to repeat its successes that it had in the municipal elections late last year.
Now, this is the fifth time that RENAMO Dhlakama is running for president. Aren't his past failures likely to count against him?
Well, I agree with you. That's how I saw it. But I have been surprised at how he has attracted youth. I think youth's have seen him as someone who picked a fight with Frelimo and has actually obtained concessions. Now, his strategy, Mr. De Clama's strategy, is nothing new. He has since 1992, since the war ended in Mozambique, always looked at confrontation and brinkmanship to extract an elite bargain, so a negotiation direct between Renamo and Frelimo for concessions. That is what he did again and resulted in the September 2014 agreement, which ended the resumed conflict and has provided an amnesty and more concessions for reintegrating more Renamo fighters and a greater say of Renamo in election oversight. My biggest worry of this election is that there is heightened expectation of victory amongst Renamo supporters, also bolstered by the large turnouts in some of the rallies. But I wonder if De Clama is actually able to achieve this. If he isn't able to achieve it, what is he going to do? Is he going to accept the democratic process, or is he going to try and then again return to his old pattern of using brinkmanship and confrontation to extract further concessions? That's got to be dangerous long-term for Mozambique, and I do worry about that, that actually Renamo losing is going to be a problem if De Clama doesn't have a clear narrative to explain why he has lost, rather than just saying that it was electoral fraud and that he has been denied victory.
Alex Vines, head of the Africa program at Chatham House in the UK.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
As the Ebola death toll nears 4,500, it goes without saying that countries bordering the three Ebola-hardest hit nations of Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone are worried about the chances of the virus spreading out in their direction. Ghana is serving as the centre for the UN Emergency Ebola Response Mission ANMEER. Though it has not recorded any case of Ebola, Ghanaian authorities are not taking any chances. Isaac Kalechi reports.
At the outpatient ward of the Kolebu Teaching Hospital here in Ghana's capital, health personnel showcase a simulation exercise on how ready they are to receive Ebola patients.
Hello. Okay, you, are you there?
Sir.
Yeah, I've just received a call.
Observers at this facility watch as health workers put on personal protective equipment according to instructions and transport patients to isolation centers for treatment. This exercise has been taking place across other facilities nationwide. At the Tema General Hospital, where another national Ebola center has been set up, Albert Alabi, who heads the hospital's laboratory, talks observers through their procedures.
This is the National Ebola Center sited at the Tema General Hospital. We want to take you through a small demonstration.
It is not only health facilities that are being prepared to fight any outbreak of the deadly virus. Universities and high schools have also received Ebola handheld thermometers for testing students returning to school. Personal protective equipment, hand sanitizers, and gloves have also been distributed. Education Minister Professor Nana Opokuagyeman says authorities aren't taking any chances.
We have requested posters to be placed in strategic places. Ordinary things, what can we do if it's just washing our hands, drying our clothes, you know, what can we do?
But students of some universities aren't impressed with the kind of Ebola screening taking place.
We thought it would be about screening. I think it was not all that effective and they should improve it.
They should have been able to put in place at least some form of testing. Question is, you cannot tell if somebody is telling the truth or not. And people would also want to tell the truth because they might be tagged or you might not want to give them a room or you want to separate them.
Remarks like these suggest that some don't have much confidence in the preventive measures. Some fear havoc might spread if there is an Ebola outbreak in Ghana. But Ghana's health minister, Dr. Ajman Mensah, insists that Ghana is safe, even though he admits the outbreak elsewhere in the sub-region is frightening.
Ghana, we are not relenting on our effort in making sure that we don't have Ebola in the country.
On the streets of Accra, there are mixed reactions to the possibility of the disease breaking out in Ghana and how well the country is prepared for it.
If doctors confirm it in Ghana, we will be careful. But if the disease is not in Ghana, we must be cautious how we talk about it. Unless they're hiding the facts from us, we need to stop trumpeting the disease. If you don't have a headache, how can you go for a painkiller?
I get scared when I watch TV and I see the havoc the disease is causing in other countries. So we are praying the disease doesn't come to Ghana.
Meanwhile, health workers and others continue to prepare for the worst and hope that it never happens.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Behind the headlines.
Cremation is one of several options for burial. Intense heat is used to reduce the body to its basic elements of bone fragments. It's an ancient practice common with the Hindu community, but now it's becoming popular in Kenya. This may have something to do with the cremation of Africa's first female Nobel Peace Laureate, Professor Wangari Maathai. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula reports.
Crematorium director Harish Rabadia said the ancient old ritual performed by the Hindu in Kenya since the First World War has now become popular in the country, especially Nairobi, where mostly wealthy Kenyan Africans are opting for cremation.
We have two kinds of cremation taking place here. One we do with firewood, the other one is the boiler with diesel, which does not bring any kind of smoke or anything. The country is growing, the population is increasing. The more we keep on burying, the more land will go everywhere. It will reach a certain time when we will not have enough space to stay around. Some prefer to be cremated. They are brought here, they just go with the ashes.
Harish Rabadia is of the view that Kenyan Africans cremate their relatives because cremation charges are low compared to funeral expenses. However, Rabadia has good news to Kenyan Africans who cannot afford to pay cremation charges.
There are some people, if they cannot afford and they want to be cremated, we as the society look into the matter, consider and see what can be done, and we do it free of charge.
The machine where cremation is done using diesel compared to firewood is now on, and Harish is continuing to narrate what happens.
Once the body comes in the car, we put the body outside, people to view it. Once it is being viewed, we bring it inside for prayers, for the family people to come in for the prayers.
What is that? I'm shocked. I don't know.
Once it is inside, we close this door. Nobody sees inside what is going on.
But you are not shocked. I was shocked, you know, when the fire came.
I'm used to it.
I see. But you did not warn me.
You have to get used to it. That is how you get into life.
Information collected from hearse operators who frequently transport bodies from Nairobi to rural areas shows that the cost of transporting the dead is extremely high, especially for ordinary Kenyans. For example, transporting a body from Nairobi to rural areas covering distances of between 300 and 600 kilometers costs a minimum of Kenya shillings 95,000, about $1,200. Rabadia said the crematorium charges half that amount to cremate a body. In recent years, he said an average of 100 Kenyan Africans are cremated in the country every month, and that at least 4 Africans are cremated at the Nairobi Hindu Crematorium every month. 42-year-old Robert Mwania, an attendant who has worked at the Hindu Crematorium for more than 20 years, said until 5 years ago, Kenyan Africans never visited the crematorium, but now many people visit the place to make inquiries about cremation.
Before, many Africa, they are not coming here, but we have seen the difference. This time, we have many Africa coming here. Some Africa, they have not enough money to buy coffins and to transport the body from Nairobi to Lusaka.
A cross-section of Kenyans had varying views on cremation. 23-year-old Arafa Idi, who works with the film company Africa Productions, sees cremation as a very strange practice that is purely an African.
From my background, it's a strange thing. I feel that it's very inhumane. One thing that I've been taught is that people can still feel and hear when they're dead. I just think of if I burn my loved one, they would feel the pain. It's just unbearable. So as for the people who cremate, they choose what they believe in and what they feel it's right. So if someone feels that's right to them, that's okay.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula. Let's now return to the land of the living. The grey-crowned crane is a rare bird found in Rwanda. However, this beautiful creature is now listed as endangered because of poaching and domestication. A Rwandan veterinary officer, Olivia Nsengimana, began a project to save the birds from extinction. His determination has won him this year's Rolex Award. Flora Kaitesi reports.
The grey-crowned crane can easily be mistaken for a peacock. It is one of the most unique species of birds in Rwanda. With a golden tufted crown and a red spot on its neck, it is a desirable pet for Rwanda's elite. It is considered a symbol of wealth and longevity. But with only a few hundreds left in the wild, conservationists say the grey crane birds are threatened with extinction. Olivia Nsengimana, a 30-year-old trained veterinarian, is determined to change this trend. Before this, Nsengimana worked with gorilla doctors in Rwanda's northern province. He tells me that many of the birds are in captivity.
So many Rwandans and even international people, they buy those cranes with poachers who go and poach them from the marshlands. And when they buy them, they have them in their garden and they cut their feathers so that they don't fly. Some of them, they are injured, completely injured. Their wings are injured so that they can't fly. So once they are in captivity in people's home hotels, they don't reproduce. So the population here is very seriously declining.
Olivier Nsengimana's passion to save the grey-crowned crane has earned him an international accolade, the Rolex Enterprise Award, along with $50,000. He is the first Rwandan to win the prestigious award. Despite a ban by the government of Rwanda on killing, injuring, capturing or selling endangered species, Nsengimana says local residents poach them and sell them as cheaply as they sell chickens in the market, making this one of the biggest challenges in conserving the birds.
So what we are trying to do is we are conducting also, we have education activities around marshlands, but also trying to find ways we can raise or encourage people to have alternative source of income so that we can have like a kind of balanced relationship between our biodiversity. So we are trying to encourage and reestablish that balance between people and wild animals. And yeah, you know, the problem with conservation in developing countries is poverty.
The population of cranes dropped drastically by 80% over the last 45 years. Only 300 to 500 are estimated to exist in the Rwandan wild. Nsengimana's task is to return the cranes to their natural habitat, but is faced with a bottleneck of convincing rich people who are keeping the birds as pets to give them up.
Flora Kaitesi in Kigali.
Opinion.
This week's opinion takes us back to our main story, elections in Mozambique. As we heard earlier on from Alex Vines, the head of Africa program at Chatham House in the UK, another defeat for Dhlakama's opposition Renamo Party could cause a political crisis.
My biggest worry of this election is that there is heightened expectation of victory amongst Renamo supporters, also bolstered by the large turnouts in some of the rallies. But I wonder if Dhlakama is actually able to achieve this. If he isn't able to achieve it, what is he going to do? Is he going to accept the democratic process, or is he going to try and then again return to his old pattern of using brinkmanship and confrontation to extract further concessions? That's got to be dangerous long term for Mozambique.
Alex Vines, head of Africa program at Chatham House in the UK. And his analysis brings us to this question. What should Mozambique do to protect whatever democratic gains it has made? Send us your say either by text message on +491609575950, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110. Bonn, Germany. And now, here's a recap of our main stories. Mozambique's opposition RENAMO has said it may have uncovered a case of election fraud in the northwestern province of Tete. Ghana is taking precautionary measures to stop the Ebola virus from entering the country. And a Rwandan veterinary officer has won an award for efforts to preserve the grey-crowned crane. That's all we had time for. To join me same time tomorrow for another edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn.